Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's another rubber game gone by the wayside, courtesy of the Cardinals' quiet bats. What's going on with this offense, and why can't they score any runs? Coming up on B-Shafe Daily. What's going on, everyone, and welcome in to this edition of B-Shafe Daily. Brendan Schaefer here with you. It is the evening hours of Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. Cardinal bats were silent once again on Wednesday. Series finale in Detroit. Final game of the road trip. Rubber game, a chance to win a series on the road. None of it happened for the Cardinals as they fall to the Tigers 4-1. Finish up the road trip on an even note, taking 2 of 3 from the Mets and then dropping 2 of 3 to the Tigers in Detroit. 4-1 the final. Miles Michaelis takes the loss, despite the fact that he actually pitched okay. We'll talk about the outing for Michaelis and take stock of kind of where he is at this point in the season. But more importantly, we're going to spend some time talking about this Cardinal offense and why the bats simply have not been able to get it going. Appreciate you guys for joining me. Make sure to hit that subscribe button in the lower right-hand corner of the screen. It's the play button, red button. Subscribe to the Brendan Schaefer St. Louis Cardinals Writer YouTube channel if you haven't done so already. Daily Cardinals content throughout the season. You can also find the podcast B-Shafe Daily by searching for it on Spotify and following over there or subscribing on Apple Podcasts as well. And just a quick reminder, there is an ad-free option on Spotify if you want to become a paid subscriber over there. No more ads for the podcast, so check out that link in the description. And something else I never say, hit the bell for notifications on this YouTube channel so you know when we have a new video dropping or when we go live for a live stream, etc. Let's dive right in, though, to the content of the day, which is the Cardinal offense. Still cannot get anything going. And if you checked out the thumbnail on the front of this video, the picture, it's got the ranks. It's got the MLB rankings for the Cardinal offense, and it ain't pretty. It ain't pretty. The Cardinals hit a home run today. Wilson Contreras knocking one out of the yard. Solo shot. It's the only run the Cardinals could muster in the game, which is a problem. But Contreras is at least doing his job, continuing to swing a pretty good bat. Now, outside of the homer, he did strike out 3 times today, and a couple of them were pretty costly in terms of opportunities for the Cardinals to get something done, and ultimately Wilson goes down swinging the other 3 times. So despite the homer, I guess you could say there were some rough moments for him today. But as a team, the Cardinals 0-for-3 with runners in scoring position. They just didn't get too many of those opportunities in this one. 7 hits as a team, 2 walks. So you're scattering the base runners. 8 strikeouts. Cardinals don't strike out as much as some teams, but other teams that are striking out a fair bit, it's usually happening with the notion of a trade-off down the line. Like, the team that has the most strikeouts as an offense in Major League Baseball is the Seattle Mariners. And sure, they'd like to cut down on their strikeout total, but they at least have 31 home runs to the Cardinals' 21. Mariners, about middle of the pack in baseball and homers. The Oakland A's are actually ahead of the Mariners. They have 37 homers. That's 6th in baseball. So they don't necessarily mind the 309 strikeouts. The Athletics are 2nd in the league in Ks, but they're top 10 in homers. The Reds have 306 Ks, but 32 homers. Red Sox, 36 homers, despite the 303 strikeouts. A lot of these teams that are toward the top are at least hitting home runs at a decent rate. Can't say the same for the Pirates and the Rockies. They strike out a bunch. They're kind of down toward where the Cardinals are in homers. But you get my drift. A lot of times you'll take the strikeouts if it is offset by some power production, by some home runs. Well, when you look at where the Cardinals land in the homer department after Wednesday's games, it's last. 30th in MLB, dead last. Not a single team worse than the Cardinals in hitting the ball out of the yard so far this Major League Baseball season. Cardinals have 21 homers in 31 games played. The Chicago White Sox hit two homers today, including one by Tommy Pham, and the White Sox are coming to town on Friday night. That'll be the weekend series. And they're a terrible team. The expectation should be a sweep when you play the White Sox, especially when you play the White Sox at your home building, as the White Sox have been downright terrible overall, but even worse on the road, where they have an almost incomprehensible record of 1-13 on the season. They're coming to Busch for three this weekend. The Cardinals darn well better sweep it. The 2-3 is not enough against this team with the way things are going. But with the way things are going for the Cardinals, it's hard to envision they're going to do enough offensively to sweep anybody out of the ballpark. And we'll see who leaves with the crown in MLB of least home runs hit of all 30 teams when the White Sox head back out of town after Sunday's game. White Sox have 22 dingers, Cardinals have 21, and those two sides face off against one another this weekend at Busch Stadium. Cardinals get the off day on Thursday. They get some extra time to think about what they've done, put them in timeout. It's just been really, really rough offensively. Last place in homers in Major League Baseball. And you might say, okay, home runs aren't everything. You're right. Let's just talk about runs scored, because that's simple. And it's obviously an important number. To win games, you got to score runs. Cardinals ranked 28th in baseball in runs scored. Only the Athletics and those same White Sox we were talking about just a moment ago rank below the Cardinals in runs scored. Okay, how about OPS? Maybe they're just hitting into some bad luck, maybe into lack of timely hitting. We'll get to the runners and scoring position numbers coming up. 638 is the team-wide OPS. That is good for 28th in baseball. So three from the bottom in OPS, which is simple. On base plus slugging. You getting on base, you hitting for power. The answer in both cases is no for the Cardinals. They're only 26th in batting average, 220 batting average. Four teams worse than them in that category, so that's a little better. But you're still talking about bottom five in virtually every meaningful statistical category. Let's talk about runners in scoring position. It was only 0-3 today, but on the season, Cardinals are hitting .202 with RISP, so worse than their season-long .220 batting average. Not a clutch team at this point. 27th in baseball in batting average with runners in scoring position, which in this particular instance, I think it's more valuable than OPS with runners in scoring position, because just the base hit is good enough, typically, when you've got runners in scoring position. Granted, how many times have we seen the Cardinals basically need four singles to score a run? If the guy from second base is not able to score on a hit, that's happened before. That's happened a couple times, time or two, right? But even if you wanted to give the Cardinals credit for hitting for a little better power when they get runners in scoring position, and they do happen to come through, 624 OPS, that's also below the season-long average of 638. On the OPS, that ranks 26th in baseball. So literally, there's not a category that matters that the Cardinals aren't bottom five in the league in. And that's not just the National League, that's the major leagues. I mentioned the strikeout numbers. The Cardinals are actually in a little better shape than I thought they were in terms of strikeouts. They rank right in the middle, 15th. But they're not, you know, they shouldn't be striking out, because if their plate approach doesn't include swinging for the fences, maybe it does, and they're just bad at it right now, but at least they're only middle of the pack in strikeouts. I don't really know. If you're looking for a silver lining to this offense, you're going to have to look at previous year's statistics for guys like Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado. Basically, everybody other than Wilson Contreras is doing a poor job. He's the only one in the lineup today that you would say is meeting expectations. Let's go down the list. Donovan's down to a 677 OPS. He's hitting 222 as your leadoff hitter. He went 0 for 3 today. Did reach via walk. So on base does matter for a leadoff guy. More so than batting average, in my opinion. But 677 OPS, that's not very good. That's below league average. Got to be. Contreras, 878 OPS. We talked about him. He's doing his job. If you finish the year with an 878 OPS as Wilson Contreras, you have more than done your job at the plate. Lars Nootbaar, 185 average. He's OPSing 601. Not good. He's batting third, and I would not probably do that again. I just don't. And I know there's really nobody knocking down the door to take his spot, but I don't know about it. I might even flip Nootbaar and Wilson Contreras if you wanted to put Nootbaar in a more comfortable spot. I understand not wanting to move down Wilson because you kind of want, I think typically nowadays you want your best hitter batting second, and Contreras is that at this point for the Cardinals. But I wouldn't mind it. I've said going back to February, if I had my druthers, I know they liked the left-right sort of alignment to their lineup, which they still sort of have, because if Donovan and Nootbaar are the lefties 1-3, Contreras, Arenado, the righties 2-4, they've at least got it through the first four spots in the lineup before you get to Goldschmidt. But I would just stack the two lefties at the top and say, I don't give a damn. Just do it. See what happens. There were some times a couple years ago where it seemed like that worked out pretty well. Or I might be thinking of last year toward the beginning. Doesn't really matter. I would not hesitate to put the two lefties, Donovan, Nootbaar, 1-2. And if you wanted, put Nootbaar 1 and Donovan 2. Shake it up. We're to the point where when I read the YouTube comments of folks suggesting the different shakeups they would like to see for the Cardinal lineup, I can't hardly even say anything to the contrary at this point. Why should I? Oh, yeah, plausible idea. Yeah. Other than, like, the one thing I won't do is I still don't know that you're gaining a lot by benching guys like Nolan Gorman. I see that comment a lot, and I understand why. We haven't run through the whole lineup yet for the numbers, but he's down there toward the bottom, hitting 190 with a 606 OPS. So I get why you'd want to bench him. My point, though, with that has always been, and tell me if you disagree with this in the comments, you could throw Jose Fermin in the lineup at second base, and he did have a pinch hit today and got a base hit. Hasn't really played. I just don't know that his upside long-term is such that it's going to get the Cardinal offense back on track by having Jose Fermin in there. Maybe that's not fair to him, though, because his numbers at Memphis were very good this year. It's what earned him the opportunity for the call-up. But now the Cardinals have kind of cooled him in the way that they've handled him because he hasn't gotten to play. So I can't really talk out of both sides of my mouth with that one, can I? I think if Fermin's going to be here, be nice to see him play a little bit, just simply because he was so hot at Memphis, and this lineup is not exactly one that can look a gift horse in the mouth. You can't look at this lineup and say, yeah, there's no room for improvement here. Everything's great. No room for a guy who was OPSing 1,000 at AAA.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
That's not the hitter Fermin's been for his career, but it's the hitter he was this year so far. And having him come up here and sit on the bench for a week doesn't necessarily help him keep that hot stroke going. Although the reason he's here is more because of Jordan Walker struggling and needing to have everyday opportunities to straighten himself out in Memphis than it is about, oh, Fermin's playing so well, we've got to get him here. He was just the obvious guy. You promote somebody different and instead of rewarding Fermin's production, that kind of wouldn't make sense. But he hasn't really gotten an opportunity to play. So other than just saying blanket statement, bench Nolan Gorman, I'm down to clown for just about anything you might suggest for the Cardinal lineup. Throw it at me. Throw it at me on Twitter at BSchaefer12 or drop it in the comments here below on YouTube. I'm serious. What is the off-the-wall lineup that you could come up with that you'd say, look, I might as well just shake it up here because adhering to whatever tenets of a lineup we had before is not getting you anywhere at this point. And I think this was an interesting conversation I was having with my dad this afternoon, where he's been saying for weeks, move up Mason Wynn in the lineup. And now you're almost to the point where his numbers have cooled off a little bit. I said Contreras was the only one meeting expectations. Wynn is certainly doing that as well. 758 OPS, hitting 293. But his 0 for today, one strikeout. It's one of those deals where now you move him up, it almost feels like the time has passed a little bit because he's maybe not quite as strong at the plate. But I don't think that that has to be an indicator or a reason. His numbers on the season are still better than a lot of these other guys. So if you wanted to shake it up, putting Wynn in the two hole maybe behind Donovan, especially if you're going to go Nupar three still, or you could go Contreras three and just forget the right, left, right stuff because it's worth zero. The right, left, right thing or left, right, left, it's worth $0 and 0 cents. It's worth zero wins. It's worth zero run production. It's worth nothing if it doesn't work. You know what I mean? It's just nice on paper to go, oh, we've got this matchup advantage. Yeah, but if that doesn't matter, if you're not scoring runs, it's probably kind of a meaningless thing, you know? I think in a perfect world, you can start thinking about how you're going to match up against the bullpen differently. You could throw just about anybody at this Cardinal lineup, though, right now, and they're probably going to get you out. It's just the reality of the way they're seeing things. And I know that Ollie Marmol suggested that, you know, maybe things are looking up, beginning to turn the corner for a few guys. We'll play some audio from Ollie Marmol here in a moment after I finish kind of running down the lineup. My whole point was all these guys are performing below expectations. Mentioned Newt Barr with the 601 OPS. Arenado was 1-for-4 today. His OPS is 680. He's at least hitting 271, but just not even any power to speak of. And I know you can say, well, that one was almost this, or it could have been a double. It was something that Ollie mentioned after the game. Yeah, the numbers are the numbers, though, at the end. You can hit into some bad luck for a little while, but there's no bad luck in the world that can have you sitting here on May 1st and still only with one home run on the season. You're just not really hitting for power at this point. That's just what it is. When you got one home run and we're in the month of May, the power swing, something's going on. But to his credit, 271 average is just about highest in the lineup behind Mason Wynn. It is the highest in the lineup from today. Wynn's hitting 293. Arenado's hitting 271. Burley is also at 271. Goldschmidt 0-for-3, reached via walk, 630 OPS. Nupar, Arenado, Goldie. That's 3, 4, 5 in your lineup, the heart of your order. 601, 680, 630 OPS. You need to look no further than that to wonder why this Cardinal team is struggling. But you could look further if you wanted to. It doesn't get a lot better. Donovan, 677. We talked about him leading off. That's not good enough. It's not to say he's not a good player and he won't come out of it, but we're just talking about the production and what it is so far. Burleson's a 706 OPS. He's actually coming around a little. Had some big swings yesterday. Today, 1-for-4 with 2 Ks. Wynn was 0-for-3, as we mentioned. 758 OPS, though, still very, very solid. Gorman, 190, 606 OPS. And Michael Ciani actually went 2-for-2. And then Fermin pinch hit for him, and he got a hit, too. So the 9-hole in the lineup coming up with a 3-for-3 day. Ciani, 171 average, 497 on the OPS. Dylan Carlson is on the way, though. He has started a rehab assignment and could very well be ready to go by Friday or maybe later in the weekend, if not by early next week. It sounds like Dylan Carlson is going to be back soon, and he will plug right in for Michael Ciani in that 9-hole or wherever they want to bat him. But he'll be, I would think, the everyday center fielder until further notice. And hopefully that's a boost to the lineup because we're asking, well, what is this? What do you do with this Cardinal lineup? Giving Dylan Carlson back, it's not that he is expected to just light the world on fire, but if he could have a 705 OPS, I'm serious. I mean, that'd be a little below average maybe, but it's higher than what the Cardinals are getting from a lot of their players, and it's certainly higher than what they've gotten out of the 9-hole in the center field slot this year, despite Ciani's 2-for-2 day. He's still at 497 on the OPS. That's just not competitive enough. Defense matters. It really, really does. But it's to the point where the offense is so far worse than I ever could have imagined it would be that you can't really fault the Cardinals if they ultimately make the decision of, well, let's go for a little more offense in center field. Let's try it. Now, defense matters too. You get yourself into catch 22. We know how they lost game two on Tuesday. Brandon Crawford just didn't make a play. That's a routine grounder to short. Burleson hauling A out in left field, trying to come in on a ball, but couldn't quite get to it before it drops in front of him for a double. So these things matter defensively, 100% they do, but the Cardinals are stuck between a rock and a hard place because they also need to score some runs, which is something that Ollie Marmol alluded to. Now, Miles Michaelis was fine today. Six innings, three runs, didn't walk anybody, which is nice. Did give up a home run on just a lollipop curveball that there was nothing else to do but hit it out. That accounted for a couple of the runs, and he also gave up a run prior to that in the second inning. But then settled in. Innings 4, 5, and 6 were good for Michaelis. Quality start. 6 innings, 3 runs. A lot of you guys have said in the comments that, hey, to me, Miles Michaelis, when I think about this Cardinals rotation, he's really like their number 5. And if that's true, that's fine. 6 innings, 3 runs you take from your number 5 every time. Nothing flashy about it. It's not going to do wonders for his ERA because it was already high. And a 6-inning, 3-run outing is equivalent to a 4.50 ERA. So it lowers a little bit, but Michaelis is still at 5.68 for the season. If he could go 6 innings, 3 runs every single game 25 more times this season, I think the Cardinals would genuinely take that because it falls into line with the innings eater mantra, keeping the bullpen a little more fresh. It's something that Steven Matz flat out is not doing. We know the injury situation with him. Was announced that he's going to get an MRI and they'll figure it out what the situation will be. I doubt he makes his next start, and I assume he will go on the injured list almost regardless of what the MRI says, because why in the world would you, if you have the option to shelve him for a little bit with the way that he looks, and there's the cover story of a back issue or the real thing of a back issue, it really doesn't matter. If they can put him on the IL, that is the place for him to be right now, because he was not competitive. So hopefully it is an injury. I don't say that because, I mean, I hope he's hurt long-term, but hopefully there is some level of explanation for why you're seeing what you're seeing from Steven Matz. 3 1/3, I still can't get over that. 3 1/3 innings when you had to have length because you knew you were playing 27 innings in 24 hours. 3 1/3 was not it. That was not the ticket. And the Cardinals even came back to take the lead in that game, but they felt they had to use certain pitchers just to navigate the bulk of innings that they had to cover, and those guys didn't get it done. And Gallegos was one of them. He was going to pitch either way. That's another story. You have to have a better bullpen in the B group when you aren't going to your A group every day because you can't. Right now, the Cardinals have about half of a bullpen instead of the more depthy group that they thought they would have because guys like Gallegos aren't performing. But as it pertains to Miles Michaelis, you get 6-3. It's not perfect, and we don't need to pretend he's a number 2 at this point in his career if we're calling that a good outing. But it's serviceable, and it gave the Cardinals a chance to win. That's the way the rotation was designed. I've probably said this 100 times already in 2024. They built the rotation to have these types of outings, 6 innings, 3 runs, have the bullpen be healthy, rested enough, and quality enough to hold it there. Now, Romero did come in and gave up a run, but he still has a 1.72 ERA. So those will happen. You're not going to end a season with a 0 ERA as a reliever. It happens. You give up a run, you give up a couple of hits and one run in an inning. But that's still enough to go, all right, you gave up 4. This is supposed to be a top 10 robust offense. You scored at least 4, I'm sure, maybe 5, so we don't have to go to extra innings. That was not the case. The Cardinals scored 1 run. They did it on a solo homer. And they did nothing else the rest of the day. 5 left on base. They lost 1 on a caught stealing of Ciani. They lost 1 on a Goldschmidt double play. 5 left on base, 0 for 3 with Risp. That's the story of your ball game. But we'll hear from Ollie Marmol on Michaelis' performance. And then before he's even asked about the offense, he knows the questions about that group are coming. So he cuts it off at the pass, and you'll get a chance to hear his initial thoughts on the offense before the reporters do ultimately ask him a little bit more specifically about the group. Here's that audio courtesy of Bally Sports Midwest. Cardinals manager, Ollie Marmol.
Nice job. retired the last 10, did a nice job of pitching down in the zone as the game went on, navigated some traffic, but overall did a really nice job. We really did. Just not enough offense. Had our shots, just didn't cash in. We got to figure out a way to score some runs. That's been the topic, and we got to figure out a way around it.
So you hear Ollie there on the notion of recognizing that the team needs to score more runs. Miles did a nice enough job to give him a chance. They didn't score runs. Katie Wu, I believe, here is going to ask Ollie about the quality of the at-bats that he's seeing from this group while they're continuing to struggle with the results. Here was Ollie Marmol to this question from Katie Wu, courtesy again of Bally Sports Midwest on the audio.
Talked about quality of at-bats and how they can be a good indicator regardless of results.
Sure.
What did you see from the quality overall of the series?
Certain guys are starting to feel a lot better. I would say Goldie feels a lot better about where he's at. Nolan easily could have had four hits and two doubles today, right? Like, he just stayed on the ball well. That last one to right center, I mean, the line drive to second, the line drive to third. So that's a positive, and we're going to need it. I mean, you look at the games that we've been dropping. We're in every game, just not enough runs across the board. So, man, all we can do is continue to work. These guys are getting after it. It's just not coming together just yet offensively. Yeah.
So there's Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol asked about the quality of at-bats he's seeing from the group. And you heard him there. He said Goldschmidt is feeling good. Goldschmidt feels like he's coming around. Today was 0-for-3, drew a walk, struck out once. Arenado, they felt like he could have had four hits. He went 1-for-4, hits into some bad luck. The reality, though, is that those days are going to happen. And at the end of the season, your numbers are fair. Your numbers, this is something that Paul Goldschmidt said last year when the Cardinals were struggling. He said baseball's a fair game. Over 162 games in 6 months. Like, you might think one thing about your team, and we're a pretty good team, and we are this offensively, or we, you know, what's great about baseball, he said, is you're going to know. You're going to find out. The numbers are going to tell you at the end of the year. You can pretend the numbers aren't what they are for right now because you've got the notion of five more months left to play. But this month that they have played is still a sample size that's going to count toward the team that they are at the end of the year, and more importantly to this context, the offense that they are at the end of the year. If they play like a top five offense the rest of the way, yeah, they're probably not going to be a top five offense in the raw numbers because they took the first month off, but they'll probably be 9th or 10th or 11th or whatever in baseball at the end of the year, and we'll say that's pretty good, and we'll remember that, hey, they flipped the script when May began. They really turned it on, and the rest is history. And I guess that could technically happen. You're talking about two Hall of Fame caliber players in Goldschmidt and Arenado. Now, I don't think either are getting in the Hall of Fame if they don't continue to compile some numbers over the coming years. And if this is the beginning of the end for both of them, that dream is not going to take place. But with what they've done to this point, there's no question that they're on that trajectory. Those guys have that pedigree, so there is the world in which a month from now, we're talking about this team and going, oh, yeah, I mean, Arenado's got a 788 OPS, but that's just because, you know, you remember how bad he was the first couple weeks. Or, well, Goldie's, you know, got 10 home runs and 820 OPS. He's playing like an MVP again. It's just remember that bad month he had. Like, that could happen. Am I predicting it to happen? No. I think it'll be somewhere in between. And I don't dispute that Arenado's taken better at-bats and even that generally Goldie has taken better at-bats. And the numbers are starting to reflect that a little bit. 680 on the OPS for Arenado was higher than it was, and even for Goldie at 630, he spent a while down in the fives. So there have been enough games where he has produced that the numbers are slowly beginning to creep up. But we are still going to figure it out and find out at the end of the year what these guys are at this point. What are the numbers? And I was willing to write off last year as an aberration for both of them when they performed below career norms. Well, the team kind of tanked it toward the end and everybody limped to the finish. Arenado, you know, you end the season on the IL. Those things happen in a lost year. They're going to come back refocused and be just fine. I was willing to take that leap of faith in both players, and I still think both can turn it around relative to what they're doing, but it may be time to cope with the fact that they're not the MVP caliber hitters that they once were. Like I said, 3 weeks from now, I could be singing a completely different tune if we see these guys break out of it. And I'm not closing the door on both of them doing it. But if you're spending 6 months in a summer waiting for a tomorrow that never comes because the players are just what they are at this point, well, then you end up playing the sucker. And everybody was the sucker last year. If you believe that it was early, it was early, it was early. And then the rug gets pulled. And, well, you know, of course they have to sell at the deadline. Look at their record. Yeah, that ended up being the way that it played out. So I don't think it's, I don't think these Cardinals are beyond reproach, even though it's only a month into this season. I think you can talk about what it looks like. It's been disappointing. It's not been good enough. And if it stays anything remotely like this, this team is not going anywhere, and they're not going anywhere fast. They're 14 and 17. You could argue that a little bit of a better offensive production, they'd be a team above 500 if they had even last year's offensive numbers, which were rather pedestrian, middle of the pack. I think they were 19th in runs scored, but tied for 13th in OPS. So I mean, average out to middle of the pack. But if you were middle of the pack in offense right now, where would that get the Cardinals in runs scored? Their rank is 28th in runs scored. They've scored 109 runs. If you pushed them up to 15th, they'd have 139. That's how many the Rangers have. So that's a question of 30 extra runs. That's an extra run per game, basically, to be middle of the pack instead of where they are. You give this Cardinal team an extra run per game on the average, they're probably at minimum 16 and 15, and I think they're probably even better than that because the pitching has been pretty darn good. Outside of a couple of games where you are probably going to lose no matter how many runs you scored, and I'll count yesterday's game in that, the 11-6 game on Tuesday, you know, you don't give up 11 runs and win very often, so I can't pin that one on the offense. They scored six. Gallegos happened. Steven Matz and Kyle Leahy a little bit, and Brandon Crawford's defense. Those things all happened. But if you look at the team ERA, about four for the Cardinals, I think it's honestly even a little better than that if you're able to recognize that just a couple of these games isolated, they're getting bombed, and they were going to lose regardless on those days. So outside of, I think you could say, three games of the 31 that have been like that, the one with Kyle Gibson against Miami, we've talked about that one a lot. The 11-6 yesterday, there was one other one that I can't remember who pitched in it, but it might have been one of the LA games. But the point is that the pitching has been plenty good enough to win more than half their games, but the offense has been such that it's surprising they're only three games below 500, almost regardless of what the pitching has been. The number of times the Cardinals have scored three or fewer runs almost boggles the mind, because again, I spent all February talking about, for this to work, for the way that they designed this rotation to work, they're honestly going to have to be toward the top of the league in their ability to limit the number of times they go three or fewer runs. They're going to need to be robust, not scoring eight runs a day. They don't need that. They need to score four a day and limit the number of times that they don't. But instead, we've seen the Cardinals 19 times score three or fewer runs out of the 31 games that they've played. That's got to be the worst mark in baseball. I don't know where I would find that information, but that's got to be one of the worst offenses in baseball in terms of the consistency with which they're basically shut down. Because if you're only scoring three runs, that's a day where the pitching staff on the other side won. They did their job against you. The Cardinals have had that happen 19 out of 31 times. It's the expectation at this point for the Cardinals to have a feeble offensive production. And the question is, for a lot of people, how do they fix it? What do they do? What can you tangibly change? What's causing it at first, and then what can you change? I think what's causing it is collectively guys who you expect to be better than their playing aren't doing it. They're playing poorly. You can look up and down the lineup. Donovan, Nupar, Arenado, Goldschmidt. Not sure on Burleson. He might be right around what he is. But Gorman, and I'll add Jordan Walker because he's supposed to be here and he's not. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the guys that were supposed to be your starting nine on a daily basis are either underperforming their expectations or are vastly underperforming their expectations. That's 66% of your lineup. You can't win that way. Contreras above, win at or above expectations, and Michael Ciani, you know, maybe you didn't have expectations for him, so he can't be below expectations, but he's playing a lot of baseball for you, and he's hitting 170, so below. And you can factor Victor Scott into that mix as well, because he was vastly below anything you could have hoped for. He didn't hit 100, so I know that he was maybe not, proved that he was not quite ready for this, but he didn't even hit 100. So you can, it's fair to call that what it was offensively. And again, I thought it would be a good idea to bring him up at first, and it just didn't work out. Did not pan out. Although I did see he hit a home run in Memphis the other day. He's going to be just fine. I think if he would have had a little better luck, honestly, in the early going, a few of those batted balls fall in for hits and the average wasn't staring him in the face at 083 or whatever, it might have worked out just fine. But nevertheless, you've got a full lineup outside of a couple guys that are just way underperforming what they're supposed to do. So that's why you have the offense you have. But there would be people who would look at that and say, okay, whose fault is that if it's not the individual players? Can you tie a string around all of this and say, why aren't we talking about the hitting coach? Why aren't we talking about Turner Ward and whatever's going on there causing the Cardinals to not be able to produce offensively? And I engaged in a few different back and forths with people on Twitter earlier today because I do think this is an interesting conversation. There was a comment I received from a guy whose handle is Fire Moselock. I guess I did just give him credit for who said it, but anyway, that's who it was. Guy's named John on the username. He said, Turner Ward has been killing this team offensively and has ruined its offensive identity ever since he's been hired. Which is, like, there's blaming the hitting coach, and then there's whatever that is, because Turner Ward was an assistant when Jeff Albert was here, so it's not, he doesn't even know. Anyway, sometimes there's so many things wrong in a comment that I have a hard time. But no, I understand where he's coming from, is that, like, all right, I want to talk about Turner Ward because this offense stinks right now, and he's the hitting coach. But the fact that he is even employed makes me not want to watch a single game. Didn't watch today for this exact reason. And then he adds, and because Miles is a bottom 10 pitcher in MLB. So there you have that. I just replied to it with a quote tweet and said, seems to me you should attribute the performance by the hitters to the hitters, but whatever makes you happy in life, I say, go for it. And then I replied to that and said, the offense is definitely looking stinky, though. I'm not going to debate a soul on that one. I'm not debating that the Cardinals aren't problematic. I just wonder how much we can possibly know that it's the hitting coach's fault. But on the other side of that, I don't need to defend the hitting coach to the death because we really don't know that he's doing anything productive. I am to understand that Paul Goldschmidt is very fond of the hitting coach, but that's not turning Paul Goldschmidt into a productive player this year to have a guy that he values and appreciates on the staff. Now, do you want to make Paul Goldschmidt mad, fire his guy? I guess you could. Maybe he plays better out of spite. I don't know. Doesn't really seem like Goldie's style. And Goldie would be the first one to get in line and say, look, I am responsible. If anybody's pointing a finger at Turner Ward, I'm the guy they should be pointing at. And then if Arenado is honest with himself, he'd say the same thing. And Nolan Gorman would say the same thing. And the individual players can take the responsibility for their poor play because the guys are playing poorly, collectively and individually. There's almost nobody safe from that statement outside of Wilson Contreras and even some of his opportunities today with men on base didn't go very well with the strikeouts, which was something that Derek Gould did ask Ollie about, by the way. And Ollie said, no, I'm not worried about Contreras. I think he was probably thinking he's the one guy that's done anything for us. So not going to throw him under the bus here, but thank you for the opportunity. Ollie said, no, he kind of brushed that one off. But basically everybody else is below their expectations. So when does that reflect on the hitting coach and Turner Ward? Cardinals fans have the question. I understand it. And so I decided, like, I don't want to act like I'm sitting here on the soapbox and telling you that hitting coaches don't matter and it's up to the players. So I want to be able to see both sides of it. Jimmy McBuckets replied, just do what I do and blame all parties involved. And I said, an equal opportunity hater, I can appreciate that. Certainly can. Alex K. replied to my original tweet about, seems like you should attribute the performance of the hitters to the hitters, and said, I don't disagree, the hitters need to hit, but at this point, going back to last year, you can question the team-wide approach and their preparation for certain pitchers. I don't think I've seen a whole team miss fastballs right down the middle like these guys have, etc. And I shared Alex's tweet, and I said, yeah, I don't disagree with anything Alex said here, but I do have a long-standing philosophy. My thought that the hitting coach, when things aren't going well, is merely the scapegoat of an underperforming offense. People kind of overrate the influence of the hitting coach and what he can do to get a struggling player back with it. Like, there are things, and we hear all the time, oh, somebody's got their guru hitting coach on the side, and they said one little thing, and it opened up a world of possibilities for him. And I think that thing is kind of true. It's a little fluky when those things happen, because as a coach, it is your job to be able to tap into whatever the player needs to hear at that point in time. And that's not exclusive to baseball. That can be baseball, golf, bowling, basketball. If you're shot, you know, your free throw is whatever. There's a variety of sports that this would apply to, where good coaching, the mark of good coaching, is to be able to get the best out of the players, make them see a perspective that maybe they weren't seeing about their own game or what they can do to change and fix things. That's coaching. So, you know, Turner Ward's not just there to collect a paycheck. He should be trying to fix this offense. I want to make sure I highlight the limitations. He can only do so much. Prep before games, in the dugout, between at-bats, in the cage. He can't go in the batter's box for these guys, and neither can Ollie Marmol. However, one of the points that Alex raised about their preparation for pitchers, a lot of times they are not jumping on starting pitchers. They are getting eaten alive by starters, and then late in the game, they might be able to do a little damage off a bullpen guy, and that's about it. They got to Adrian Hauser last weekend. Other than that, man, they're really not doing much against starters, and I think that's an honest evaluation and a criticism, and that's something you could point to Turner Ward and say, what's his job if not to scout the starting pitcher and say, hey, here's what we're doing, and have those hitter meetings and have it come across effectively. Now, maybe those things are happening, and the Cardinal offense is just so collectively bad that it's going in one ear and out the other, or they're trying to implement the game plan, and it's just looking nothing like a cogent game plan, because sometimes it really isn't very coherent. We'll see it. It happened today again where some of the star hitters, I think Goldschmidt did it once, they will take a fastball right down the pipe, and they will swing at a ball out of the zone for strike three. It happens all the time to this team. So what is that approach-wise? Is that something where does a hitting coach need to have the comfort to be able to get in somebody's ear, even if it's a Paul Goldschmidt, and say, hey, man, that's a backwards AB. Don't miss your pitch when it's there. You can be encouraging in the way you say that, but like, I almost feel uncomfortable diving into that level of minutia of what we think should be happening here, because when that happens on Twitter, I kind of roll my eyes and go, okay, you know, these guys are the professionals, and I get that you might have played baseball or coached baseball or whatever, but at this level, I don't know that it's as realistic to apply a principle that you may have done in the college game or the high school game and apply it to the big leagues and just assume that, yeah, that's going to work. The coach can have this guy's ear, and he's going to be amenable to it. And on the other side, it's like, all right, the guy should be amenable to it. If he's struggling, nobody should be too big for their britches. And Paul Goldschmidt isn't. I have no doubt in my mind that Paul Goldschmidt is happy to take insight from anybody, in particular Turner Ward, of whom he's quite fond. I just am trying to articulate that I think there are times where something that we could think on the outside, well, why don't they do this? The environment for that to land in the way that we think it would is maybe not the same in the big leagues. I could be wrong about that. It could just be an example of, hey, even if Goldie is not a guy that we talk about with an ego, other guys might have one, and nobody should be too good for constructive criticism from a coach. But is it an environment where everybody's a little too comfortable because the coach likes the guys and the guys like the coach, and some of those harder conversations aren't happening? I don't know that that's the case. And everything that Ollie Marmol tells us, it isn't. The conversations he talks are the right ones. And he would say if they weren't, or he would at least behind closed doors be trying to fix it if they weren't. And that's the way that this is portrayed. I'm just passing along the information. I don't doubt it. I do tend to believe Ollie Marmol when he shares those things. I understand that the fan base I'm talking to right now might be a little more skeptical, and that is absolutely your prerogative listening to go, look, Ollie can say this or that. He can say guys are having good at-bats. When does it turn into production? As a fan base, that's not unfair to ask. It isn't. You can ask those questions. You can give those criticisms, and it's well within your jurisdiction to do so. But I also mentioned, well, what can the hitting coach really do? Can he magically take a guy? We talk about the criticism of this team. They're just swinging right through fastballs sometimes, or they're taking the pitch that could be a pitch to drive, and they're letting it go by while swinging at a lower quality pitch, swinging at a pitcher's pitch to get themselves out or to hit into a double play, to basically fall right into the trap the pitcher is laying for them, getting a little bit backwards in the pitch selection that they're going to swing at. But sometimes they are swinging right through very hittable pitches. And I don't know that a hitting coach can just whisper some wisdom and get them back to crushing those fastballs rather than missing them. I don't know what the mechanics of that look like. I'm in a spot where I'm aware of my inexperience relative to this level of baseball, where I go, look, that's not my role. That's not my job. That's not why I'm getting paid. I'm not getting paid to do that. If I was, I'd have a lot more money. But I don't. So I do at times try to realize my own limitations. I understand, though, that the counter to all of this is, like, if the hitting coach can't have a positive impact and we can't quantify it, we don't really know what he's doing, why employ one? Because, again, the guy is getting paid. And at some point, I do think it has to reflect on the coach when an offense is not performing. But I also think fans tend to jump to it as their first conclusion. You guys knew that Jeff Albert needed to be fired, and then that happened. He didn't get fired. He left town because I think he was tired of everybody telling him he needed to be fired. Everybody hated him, and I did not live a day where I didn't get complaints from Cardinals fans about Jeff Albert when he was here. So the devil you know, the devil you don't. What if it's just sometimes these players need to take responsibility? It's honestly probably a combination of things. The hitting coach doesn't matter zero, because if it did, they wouldn't have them. But is it 80-20? Is it 70-30? What is the percentage that the players have to be responsible for their performance versus when are we going to measure this hitting coach and suggest that, my goodness, this was supposed to be a top 10 offense, top 12 offense, and it's bottom five and everything. Whose fault is that? And it's maybe not even Turner Ward's fault. And I don't like to talk about people's livelihoods this way, but there should be an urgency within this organization to not let this go on. And if you think that they do it in hockey all the time, if you think that a shakeup to a member of the coaching staff is going to have whatever sort of effect, even if it drives a wedge between some players, or it drives a wedge between players in the front office and they play well in spite of it, really, it's getting to the point where I can't rule that out either. I don't think that's a thing that anybody with the organization would say has merit. And of course they wouldn't, because we're talking about their jobs and that's an uncomfortable thing. And I acknowledge that. And I think we should be respectful of that. I know it's easy to say, fire this guy, fire that guy. It is a serious thing. But from the fan base's perspective, you don't need to care about that. You just want your team to win, and I'm not even saying you're wrong, right? I just, from where I sit, you do have to be respectful of those things. But is it one of those deals where you just make a move to make a move because this ain't working, and if you can't say it's the quality of the players, then what is it, right? Now, the other side of this is, and another reason that you might hear Ollie Marmol continue to insist the bats are great, is because if it's, oh, it's just bad luck, it's not a fundamental flaw with the process or the players, then how can you assign blame to the hitting coach when they're just hitting into some bad luck? So you can read through the lines on some of those things as a discerning fan and understand that while Ollie is probably telling the truth of what he sees in these ABs, the team is also incentivized to do so because it can minimize the effects of an offense that, you know, last year what happened is we woke up at the end of the year and, oh, crap, this was a terrible team. They were a bad baseball team. So internally with this team at this point, three games below 500 on a pace to lose 89 games, which is not all too dissimilar from the 91 they lost last year, although I do think there are major, major differences with this team that suggest they should be able to turn it around. It's also not automatic that they're going to turn it around. And we can hear the things that are said about the quality of the at-bats and everything. The numbers are going to be all that I care to look at the end of the year. And I think it should be all you care to look at, too. The Cardinals think they've got the players. And on paper, I don't disagree. I would not have said that 7 of the 9 would be far below expectations preseason. I wouldn't have predicted that. I would have figured that probably 7 or maybe even 8 out of the 9 would have at least a league average production on OPS, OPS plus, whatever you look at. And right now, 2 of them do. It's Wynn and Contreras. I don't think a single other guy is at league average. Not anybody from the regular lineup. Burleson might be approaching that point, hitting 271 with a 706 OPS. Where do you put the blame for that? How do you assign blame in order to construct a fix for it? It's a tough question. Blarcher31 replied to me on Twitter and said, I don't understand how you have 2 future Hall of Famers stop hitting well around the same time. Now you have 75% of the lineup hitting terribly, which is what we've been talking about. Something has to change. You can't keep doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different outcome. I replied to that tweet as well, saying, I don't disagree. I think there's something to be said for making moves out of desperation due to the urgency of a situation, even if it logically shouldn't be the fix. It is a performance-based business, so when not performing for long stretches, it shouldn't be off the table to consider shaking some trees if indeed there is urgency within the organization to fix a thing that is failing. I don't know that the Cardinals are going to shake the trees right now when it comes to the coaching staff, but I don't think you can necessarily rule it out as the weeks turn into months here, because they've played a month and you've got May to maybe kind of look at, all right, really, what kind of offense is this going to be? But you don't, if you think that there could be a coaching change, first of all, you'd have to ask the question of who are you going to bring in that's going to inspire a change in philosophy. Maybe the philosophy is the problem. Maybe it's not. We're all grasping at straws right now because the team's not playing well. They're not hitting. So it's nobody's beyond reproach for a team that did it all last year. It was more because of the pitching being terrible last year than the hitting, but the hitting underperformed last year. There's no doubt about that. And now it's drastically underperforming its expectations. Do you turn to the coaching staff? What is it that you would look at as a Cardinals fan to fix it? Do you have a lineup shakeup that you would go to? There's not probably one lineup suggestion. Again, outside of just bench Goldie, bench Arenado, bench Gorman, those guys are going to have to play because you're not getting to be the offense that you wanted to be. You know, you got to leave them in the lineup to leave the sliver of possibility that they all bounce back and are great again. They need to be in the lineup to find that out. But otherwise, you talk about the order of this batting lineup, I don't care. You could change just about anything, and I'd go, yeah, that sounds reasonable. I'd move up Mason Wynn at this point, even though I do think you run the risk of like, okay, now it's a little bit late. He's not swinging it as hot of a bat as he had been, and are you kind of just taking one of the few guys that was fine and changing things up on him to make it more difficult? But you could do about anything that you want. You go Donovan, Wynn, Contreras, Arenado, Nootbaar, Goldschmidt down to 6. I don't know. Move Goldie back to 3. Contreras 2. Mason Wynn in the 5 hole. Whatever. I don't think there's a single suggestion that I will hear and go, nope, off the table, can't possibly do it. But what do you think about the hitting coach situation? Do you assign some blame to him? Or is this about the players who aren't performing? Or is it a combination of the two? And what do you think about those numbers? Because this is, we can't deny it right now, they've played more than a month of baseball, and it is a bottom 5 offense in MLB. No way you slice it can you come up with a different conclusion. So let me know in the YouTube comments below what you think about all that and how the Cardinals might fare against the White Sox this weekend. It could be an important one to go ahead and just get the sweep. I don't know if they'll do it, but the White Sox, again, they're 1-13 on the road coming into this weekend. So that's what I've got for today, though. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. Appreciate you guys for listening, as always, for subscribing and following on Spotify, too. We'll talk to you next time on BeSafe Daily. Peace.